see are very special souls who, without good association, were very involved in the society of this world, but with association of devotees, a natural attraction for Krishna is awakening. And then when the idea came to have some regular function where we could regularly gather together and discuss Krishna Katha, we're very enthusiastic. We would like to be the hosts of that gathering. So, where's Radha Gopal? There's Radha Gopal. So, with Radha Gopal, some discussion about where and what and how, and gradually over a period of time, a little small group of devotees gathered together, kind of stumbling our way along, trying to figure out how to have a nicely organized group of devotees who would regularly come and hear about Krishna together, learning together. And gradually over time that solidified and became a very strong part of their everyday life, or weekly life. And mainly through the association of devotees and hearing the message of Krishna and chanting Krishna's holy name in our Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings, we hear from Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is the principal acharya amongst the six Goswamis, the leading personality amongst the six Goswamis, who presented the conclusions of the scriptures. And of course we're just taking part today in the beginning of the worship of Sri Sri Nittai Gaurasundara. So Gaurasundara spoke to Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami recorded those instructions in the form of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And Rupa Goswami outlined so many things, how to perform the activities of devotional service. And he indicates that there are 64 items that are very beneficial for one who wants to advance along a path of spiritual life. And amongst those 64 items, there are 5 items that are superlative in their importance. So, the Kattar family, Rajiv and Neha included, have been making nice spiritual progress by the association of devotees and serving the devotees. These are the 5 items identified by Rupa Goswami. Chanting the holy name of the Lord, hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita in the company of devotees. Then the 2 remaining items are worshipping the deity form of the Lord. And the 5th one is residing in Vrindavan. So Naperville isn't quite Vrindavan yet. Rupa Goswami's instruction regarding residing in Vrindavan is if one cannot reside in Vrindavan, then at least one should think in one's mind and covet the desire to reside in Vrindavan. So the family will be visiting Vrindavan this Kartik month and taking part in visiting the holy places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan along with other devotees. And so this 5th item was the remaining item, the worship of the deity form of the Lord. So in a very enthusiastic desire, the part of the family members to receive the deity form of the Lord in their home. This has been thought about for some time. It's a very, very serious step in life to invite the Supreme Lord to come visit you, or to speak of visit you, to reside in your home. Basically, take over the place where the Supreme Lord resides and is properly worshipped. That's his dham. So, it's a very wonderful process given by Srila Prabhupada's mercy to all of us to make very consistent, slow but steady wins the race, Prabhupada said. Slow but steady wins the race in spiritual life. He was making the comparison. But slowly, step by step, making progress along the path of spiritual life and receiving the deity form of the Lord in one's home is a very, very significant step. It requires preparation. So some years of chanting and associating and hearing and praying and becoming purified by sadhana bhakti to receive Nithai Gaura Sundara in your home. What we've done, it's not actually been a formal installation ceremony, a bathing ceremony, and receiving in with opulence and splendor and fitting standard Vaishnava way of greeting the deity form of the Lord and beginning their worship starting today. So this step is something that perhaps a number of you who are participating in this function may one day also take up in your home. Maybe some of you already have deities in your home, but this is a very special event in the Kattar family's life. So please give all of your well wishes to them that they are worship their deity. With regularity and with real devotion, and that the very, very merciful forms of Sri Sri Nithai Gaura Sundara will bestow their blessings upon the family to gradually progress on the spiritual path. And if each family member can consider some way that they can personally render some service and do that together as a family, we'll all become very strong and filled with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. This occasion of receiving or beginning the worship of the deity in the home here is somehow became part of another function that's been planned for some time. Few times of the year, in a systematic way, that some seminars are conducted amongst the congregation, and so this afternoon I'd just like to shift channels and begin what's supposed to be the first part of our seminar. Because of the scale of enthusiasm to invite many people for this function, I changed altogether the topic that I was going to cover. And I'd like to discuss chapter 13 of Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam. And actually the first part of this, the chapter is entitled Dhritarashtra Quits Home. And the first part fits in very nicely with receiving the deities. The chapter is divided into different sections, and the first section is receiving a sadhu. And how to receive a sadhu and the importance of receiving a sadhu. Because in the beginning of the chapter, it begins with Vidura returning back to Hastinapur after being away for a very, very long time on pilgrimage. Did somebody bring that third canto volume that has the bookmarks in it? So, the way that I'd like to proceed with this is just to read the verses of the chapter as we're going through this weekend and expand in certain ways. So the very first verse, Suta Goswami is speaking. Suta Goswami is narrating to the sages of Naimisharanya. And he's describing Vidura's return to Hastinapur. So he says, while traveling on pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya. And then he returned to Hastinapur. He became well-versed, as well-versed in the subject as he desired. So that we can appreciate the character of Vidura. Let's see if the children... This is children's quiz time. Children pay attention time. Okay, so there were three brothers who were Vidura had two brothers. We'll do it this way. Vidura had two brothers. You know who Vidura is? Yeah? You know who Vidura is? Who is Vidura's two brothers? He had two elder brothers. Neha, you can take part too if you know. Vidura's two brothers. Elder brothers. One of them was a blind king. Who's the blind king? Dhritarashtra. And the next brother, after Dhritarashtra and before Vidura, was Pandu. Very good. So there are three brothers, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. So I want to narrate a little bit about the whole situation of Dhritarashtra and Pandu and Vidura, going back to how they were born, because the birth of Vidura is important to understand his saintly character. There was a situation in the kingdom. So Maharaj Santanu was the king. Maharaj Santanu was king, and one of his wives was Satyavati. By a co-wife, Bhishma was born. Bhishma. Who was Bhishma? Grandfather Bhishma, right? Bhishma? So, Grandfather Bhishma was the son of Santanu. And Santanu became very attracted when he was crossing a river by one boat keeper lady whose name was Satyavati. And Satyavati had incredible beauty and very, very mystical fragrance. She had a special fragrance because it was benediction given to her by Vyasadeva. You know who is Vyasadeva? Vyasadeva. Who is Vyasadeva? Vyasadeva. What did Vyasadeva do? He compiled the Vedas and into the four Vedas and wrote Vedanta Sutra and also Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva is the author or compiler of the Vedas. So Vyasadeva produced what was produced as the son of Satyavati by Parashara Muni. Actually, Parashara Muni gave the benediction that she would have great beauty and this wonderful mystifying fragrance. Just like a very fragrant flower. What's your favorite flower? Sunflower. Carnations. Sometimes when they offer carnations to the deities. Or gardenias. Gardenias are very fragrant. Or roses. Anyway, very, very fragrant flower. So she had a very wonderful fragrance. And as the king, Santana, was about to cross the river, he became very attracted to Satyavati. And so he went to her father to request that she become his wife. And the father said no. No, he didn't go. Bhishma, who was the son, came to know that the father was attracted to Satyavati. So he went on behalf of his father and requested the Satyavati's father for the hand of Satyavati in marriage. And the fisherman, or the boatman, said, no, I will not agree to my daughter being married unless her son becomes the king. Pretty big expectations, right? For a boatman. And so Bhishma said, no problem. I'm the heir to the throne, and I'll submit that your child, born by my father, will be the heir to the throne, not me. And then Satyavati's father said, that's not good enough. Because you're an honest person, but if you have children, before Satyavati has children, then your children will want to ascend to the throne, and then there'll be a big problem. So then Bhishma said, very well, then I will not marry. So this is a great vow that Bhishma took, that he would not marry for his whole life. And his motive or his purpose in accepting that position of never marrying was just so that his father, Santanu, could be very, very happy marrying Satyavati. He sacrificed his own happiness for his father's happiness. And so then Satyavati's father agreed, very well. Then my daughter can marry Santanu, and her son will become the king. So Satyavati had two sons. Chitrangada was her eldest son. Chitrangada. And Dichitravirya. The Chitrangada was a great warrior. But in an untimely way, one Gandharva. You know what Gandharva is? Gandharva? They're like angels. They have wings and they fly around. And they sing very nicely, like your father. They're Gandharvas. They have Gandharva Loka. They have a whole planet. Gandharvas. So one Gandharva, also named Chitrangada, engaged in a battle with the son of Satyavati, Chitrangada, and he was defeated and killed. So her eldest son was killed in a battle, and her next son was named Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya. So Vichitravirya was the successor to the throne of Maharaj Santanu. And Vichitravirya had two wives. There's some detail about how he came to have those two wives, Ambika and Ambalika. But in a premature way, Vichitagiri also died. And by that time, Santanu had also died, and this was a very big problem for the royal family because there was no heir to the throne. So the co-wives, Ambika and Ambalika, they wanted to enter into the funeral pyre of their husband, Vichitraveeri. They were very faithful to their husband. But the very wise queen, Satyavati, pleaded with them, please don't do that, because there has to be an heir to the throne. If there's no heir to the throne, there's no king. If there's no king, everything, the kingdom will be go to total ruin. So you might request this as your mother-in-law, please do not do this, but agree to my proposal that the brother of Vichitraveeri produce children that you can bear. So the two were thinking, the only one that they knew, the only brother that they knew was another one of Santanu's sons, who was Bhishma. Remember, grandfather Bhishma was Santanu's son, by co-wife. So some arrangement was made by Satyavati that she spoke to Bhishma to please agree to this request, and Bhishma said, I can't. I can't break a vow. Having made a vow is better that the sun stops shining or the wind stops blowing or any other thing stops that always happens, but I can't break a vow. Not possible. The truth must be upheld. And Satyavati was in great anxiety because what to do? So being very, very wise, grandfather Bhishma, he made a proposal to his stepmother. He proposed that there is one other son who is your son, and that is Vyasadeva. He can produce children via the wives of Vichitraveeri. So Vyasadeva had given a benediction. So again, who's Vyasadeva? He compiled the Vedas. So Vyasadeva had given a benediction to Satyavati. If you just remember me, instantly I will come. Anytime. No matter what I'm in the midst of, you just remember me and call my name and I'll be there. And so she remembered that benediction of Vyasadeva, and so she called Vyasadeva to come. And Vyasadeva immediately appeared. But Vyasadeva at that time was in the midst of great austerities. And part of his austerities was he was not keeping his hair, he was not shaving his face, he was not bathing. He was just engaged in very, very severe austerities for a long period of time. So when he appeared, she was a little frightened at the appearance of her son, Vyasadeva. And she made this request of Vyasadeva, and his reply was that, actually, my dear mother, this isn't a very good proposal, because it's much better if the co-wives of Vichitraveeri undergo some purification for some period of time. By that time, for 1 year's time, I will have completed my austerities and I can appear in a normal condition. But Satyavati was in anxiety. What if something happens and then there's no heir to the throne? And so she was in such anxiety, she said, no, please assist in this way. So when he appeared, the co-wives agreed, when he appeared before Ambika, she saw the terrible appearing form of Vyasadeva, and she closed her eyes. So the child that was born was Dhritarashtra, blind. And Ambalika, when Vyasadeva appeared before Ambalika, she paled. It was such a scene to see Vyasadeva. And so the child that was born of Ambalika was Pandu, whose complexion was very pale. And so Dhritarashtra, the blind king, couldn't be the king because he was blind. So Pandu became the king, and the next child that was produced by Vyasadeva was actually the maid servant of Ambika, who was not at all, she was completely respectful of Vyasadeva. She offered all of her respects to him, and the child that was produced was Vidura. So three brothers, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. So Vidura was, because he was born of the maid servant of Ambika, he was considered part of the royal family but never given royal position. So, and there's some detail behind, this is all to appreciate who is Vyasa, who is Vidura. So, here's another question. In his life before Vidura, who was Vidura? The adults know, but it seems the kids know. If they think about it for a minute or two, a moment or two, then they'll remember. Yamaraj. You know who is Yamaraj? Who is Yamaraj?
Lord of Death.
Lord of Death. It's a description of how Vidura, or how Yamaraj rather, became Vidura, or how Vidura previously was Yamaraj. So that we can appreciate Vidura's greatness, he's actually none different than Yamaraj. This description is found in the Puranas that there was one sage named Mandukamuni. Mandukamuni was a very austere and very learned sage, and he was residing in a forest. And one day, there were some thieves and robbers that committed a crime in the city, and they ran with all of their stolen property and ran into the forest. And the constables, or the police force, they ran after them. And as they ran and ran and ran, they knew that the police were following them, so they came across the hermitage of Mandukamuni, and they ran inside, hid. And the police came right after them and found them inside the hermitage of Mandukamuni. And the way that the Mandukamuni was dressed, they thought he was one of the thieves too. So they arrested all of them. And they were sentenced to death. Death penalty for stealing, pretty heavy. And as the death sentence was that they were put on a platform, and then at the right time, when the pronouncement of death was final, the platform was suddenly removed, and they would fall on these tall spikes and be impaled by a sharp spike and die on the spikes.
Yeah.
So just as that was about to happen, word went to the king. And the king was said, "My dear king, one of those persons who's sentenced to death, it's not a thief, it's Mandukamuni. Well then stop immediately. Release Mandukamuni and ask him to come here so I can offer my apology." So just the last minute, they stopped the death punishment and brought Mandukamuni to the king. And the king was very apologetic. "I had no idea when these thieves were arrested that you were amongst them, that they had taken shelter there. And I'm so sorry. Please forgive me." Mandukamuni was very calm. "I understand. It was completely a mistake. Everything is forgiven." But Manduka Muni had an issue with Yamaraj. So he went to Yamaraj. He was such a powerful sage that he could travel wherever he wanted in the universe. So he went to the planet of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. And he questioned Yamaraj, why did this happen? Why was it that I was about to be impaled by a stake and put to death? So Yamaraj said, well, it's because when you were a young boy and you were playing with some straws and there were some little ants crawling on the ground and you were poking the ants with straws and killing some of them. And because you did that, you're going to be put to death this way, also by being poked with a stick and die. Such is the law of karma. So Manduka Muni said, very well, that would be an appropriate punishment, except for the fact that I was just a child. And in the innocence of childhood, such a strong punishment should not be given. And so because you're not a fit person for issuing the laws of Dharma, so I curse you. I curse you that you take birth as a Sudra. Because Sudras, they don't understand the laws of Dharma. What is to be done and what is not to be done. And so Yamaraj was very happy. Because being Yamaraj is no fun. Nobody says thank you after you make an arrangement for that living entity to take some hellish form on some hellish planet and suffer a lot. Nobody says thank you, Yamaraj, you're very kind. I look forward to seeing you again soon. The way the Prabhupada describes it is that Yamaraj is more busy than any other empowered person, any devata. He has so much work to do. And he likes a break. But the break that he wanted specifically was two things. He wanted to see the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And he wanted to glorify the personality of Godhead. He wanted to go on Sankirtan. And glorify Krishna. And so, when the curse was made that you take birth on earth in a Sudra family, or as a Sudra, he was very happy. And thus he took birth as Vidura, the son of Vyasadeva, and the maid servant of Ambika. So actually Vidura is very great personality, even from his birth, because Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans, right? You know this one from the play that you put on a couple of years ago. The 12 Mahajans, remember that play? He got up in front and everyone recited Svayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Komara, Kapila, Manu, Kalada, Janaka, Bhishma. You remember? Balir, Vyasakir, Vayam. The 12 great authorities. There's a play right in the temple room. Maybe it was you did the 9 processes of devotional service. Okay. So Yamaraj is one of the 12 in all the history of this planet. One of the greatest authorities, Yamaraj. And that person was actually Vidura. He took birth as the brother of Pandu and Dhritarashtra. And even in his, when Vidura was conceived by Vyas, he made a prediction that Vidura, the son who will be born of Ambika's maidservant, will be perfectly virtuous. He'll become well respected by everyone, And he'll be so knowledgeable that there will not be a person on the face of the earth that compares to his capacity of knowledge. And during that time, there were a lot of sages on the planet. So Vyasadeva gave that benediction or pronouncement. And throughout his life, Vidura was always respected as being very, very wise. He was the younger brother of the three, but when it came time for grandfather Bhishma to make arrangements for the marriage of Dhritarashtra and Pandu, he consulted Vidura, their younger brother. "I have this idea of who would be suitable wives for your elder brothers. Could you give me your learned opinion?" And after hearing the suggestion of grandfather Bhishma, Vidura agreed. "This is a very excellent idea. Proceed. It has my blessing." And Bhishma was considered very, very wise. And Queen Kunti, she's glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam for her wonderful prayers. Queen Kunti also consulted Vidura regularly. One incident where Kunti consulted Vidura is when Bhishma didn't return one day, Bhima did not return one day when the five brothers and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra had gone for a swimming outing in the Ganga, and Bhima didn't return. So she became very anxious. I'll tell more of this story later, but she became very anxious about her son's welfare. So she went to Vidura. Said, how should I understand this calamity? Bhima is so powerful. Is it possible that some bad thing has befallen him?" And Vidura gave his counsel this way. He said, "Don't worry. The sages have given their benediction that your five sons will live a very long life and will be very prosperous, so there's nothing at all to be concerned about." And just hearing the consoling words of Vidura, Kunti was completely relaxed. "Very well, whatever you say, Uncle Vidura." So, actually in her case, not Uncle Vidura, but her husband's brother. And even Dhritarashtra took the counsel of Vidura regularly. There's something that's described in this third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just before the Kurukshetra battle began, there was a last effort made to try to prevent the battle from happening. And that last effort that was made was Krishna came to make a peace treaty with Duryodhana and the Kauravas. He came with the request that, alright, although the Pandavas are the rightful heirs of the kingdom, let your sons become the emperor. But in order to have peace within the family, just give 5 villages for each of the 5 Pandavas to rule over. So when Krishna came with that proposal, Dhritarashtra turned to Vidura and asked Vidura, "What do you recommend? What should be done with Krishna's proposal?" I'm going to read to you what Vidura said. It's right in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing these words, Vidura spoke 3 lines. "This is my advice. You must now return the legitimate share of the kingdom to Yudhisthira, who has no enemies and has been forbearing through untold sufferings due to your offenses. He is waiting with his younger brothers, among whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing heavily like a snake. Surely you are afraid of him. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has accepted the sons of Pritha. So, sons of Pritha. Pritha is another name for Kunti. The sons of Pritha, that means the five Pandavas. Krishna has accepted the sons of Pritha as his kinsmen. Accepted as a kinsman because that means the Pandavas and Krishna were cousins. Do you have any cousins? Yeah. Okay, so Krishna and the Pandavas, Arjuna and Yudhisthira and Bhima, they were cousins. They were cousins because Kunti, their mother, and Krishna's father, Vasudeva, their brother and sister. So they're cousins. So Krishna agreed, when he appeared in this world, he accepted the Pandavas as his cousins. And thus all the kings of the world are with Lord Sri Krishna. He is present in his home, that's Krishna, is present in his home with all his family members, the kings and princes of the Yadu dynasty, who have conquered an unlimited number of rulers. And he is their Lord. In other words, there's a big mistake. Not only you're an accomplice to so many sinful things, but you're challenging Krishna. If you don't accept this request that Krishna is making, to give them five villages. And then the third line is really heavy. Listen to this one. You, Dhritarashtra, are maintaining offense personified, Duryodhana. But Duryodhana is standing right there. You're maintaining offense personified, Duryodhana, as your infallible son. But he is envious of Lord Krishna. And because you are thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you are devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good to the whole family. Well, Duryodhana didn't like that. And so Duryodhana turned to all the assembly and spoke the following. Who asked him to come here? The son of a kept mistress. He is so crooked that he spies in the interest of the enemy against those on whose support he has grown up. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him with only his breath. Duryodhana to his uncle. I don't think you'd ever speak like that to your uncle, right? No. So, what did Vidura do? Vidura was completely calm. Vidura was... he took the whole situation in a very, very wonderful way. He turned from the royal assembly. He walked to the door. He took off his royal garments, left them at the door, took his bow and his armor, left them at the door, and walked out and didn't come back. Didn't say a word. And our acharyas explain that he wasn't at all angry. Now this is one theme that I'm going to speak a little bit about just off of the storyline. It comes up a few times in the course of this chapter, and I particularly want to emphasize the fact that Kalki Prabhu and I were discussing this point. It came up in the Bhagavatam class, and we discussed it a little bit after. But here's the point. So, antennas up, everybody. The greatness of a person. One of the ways that the greatness of a great person can be seen is the fact that when they're insulted, they don't take it as an insult. They don't become disturbed. They don't become retaliatory or, oh yeah? Watch me, I'm going to do this to you. The sign of a great person is they remain undisturbed. There's a very, very wonderful passage in the Bhagavatam where King Chitraketu shows his quality of being undisturbed, where he's going to visit Lord Shiva, his good friend, Lord Shiva, because King Chitraketu was such an exalted personality that he had a relationship of friendship with Lord Shiva. So with his wife, he was zooming in an aerial plane to Mount Kailash and hovering over Mount Kailash, and he saw Lord Shiva sitting there on Mount Kailash with his wife, Parvati, sitting on his lap. So he called over the edge of the airplane, "Hey, Lord Shiva, what is this, the activity of a great saintly person with your wife sitting on your lap?" And Parvati became very angry. "How can you speak like this about my husband who's completely beyond any material attraction? I curse you, you take birth as a demon." And how did King Chitraketu respond? Did he say, "Oh yeah, you don't know who I am, I'm King Chitraketu"? He didn't do that at all. He got off the plane and he offered prayers to Parvati and said, "Actually, there is no offense. I spoke in friendship, in jest with my dear friend Lord Shiva. But because you've spoken this way to me, I accept. Let the curse befall me just as you've given it." And he circumambulated her 3 times, got back on his airplane and took off. So Lord Shiva then spoke to his wife that way, "And you've offended him." And he glorified King Chitraketu. Just see the mind of this person. You cursed him to go to hell, and his mind is unchanged. In fact, if you had promised him to go to heaven, or promised him liberation, his mind would have remained unchanged. So the nice verse is there, Narayana Paraksarge Nakutaschan Bibhyati Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apitu Yarta Darshanam. Svarga is heaven, Apavarga, liberation, Narakeshu, or you become a demon, go to hell. Imagine if somebody came up to you and said, "Go to hell." This is America, those things go on all the time. And your mind remains unchanged. The wife of your best friend says, "I won't say it again." And your mind remains unchanged. "Very well, I accept that I should go to hell for something that I didn't even do because you're upset with me." "Very well, accept it." And so that's what happened. He became Vritrasura, but his devotion, his pure Mahabhagavata devotion, was remained unchanged as Vritrasura. Or quite the opposite. Actually, Kalki was making this particular reference, but with Maharaj Parikshit, many of you children have seen the Mahabharata videos 100 times, right? Yeah. You haven't seen it? No. Okay. I'll tell you the story. Maharaj Parikshit was king, and one day he was in the forest hunting, and he became overwhelmed with thirst. He wanted water. And so he saw nearby a hermitage of one sadhu. So he went to the hermitage of the sadhu. He's the king. He's the emperor of the whole world. He went to the entrance of the hermitage of the cottage, and the Brahmin didn't come to receive him. So he entered right into his cottage. And there he was sitting in trance of meditation. And then Maharaj Parikshit felt offended. because he is the king. And this subject, the Brahmin, didn't offer him respect. And so he felt offended. And so he left. He left angry. And as he left angry, there was just outside the door of the cottage, there was a dead snake on the ground. The body of a dead snake. So he took his sword, and with the end of his sword, he lifted the dead snake, went back into the cottage, and placed it on the shoulders of the sage, like a garland. He said, "This is a fitting ornament for a person like you, dead snake." And he left. And after he left, as soon as he left, he was thinking or feeling, "I just did a very bad thing." Any of you had that feeling before? Something, you may say something to somebody, or you do something, and right after you do or say that something, you know, this was not right. And there's this knot in your stomach, and you feel, ooh. But you did it. So that's what Maharaj Parikshit was feeling. That feeling, that memory, that super soul telling you, this was very bad. You know what super soul is, right? It's Krishna in the heart saying, very, very bad. You're going to have to suffer for this. So the king went home to the palace thinking, something horrible is going to happen for this offense. I know it. So be it. I've done a very bad thing. And when the son of the sage, the sage name was Shamakrishi, and the son's name was Sringi. When Sringi came home, he heard, "The king had visited your father's home, and when he left, he took the snake and put it on your father's neck." And so Sringi said, "I curse the sage, I curse the king, that he should die by the bite of a snake in 7 days. So Maharaj Parikshit heard, word spread fast, the king, the emperor, has been cursed to die by the bite of a snake. And why did it happen? Why did it happen, Kalki? He took offense by the fact that the sage didn't respect him. He took offense. He got all excited and said and did things that he later regretted. And so he had to die for that, because he reacted in a very emotional way. He took offense to something that actually wasn't, because the sage was just in trance. How is he supposed to even do anything or say anything? But the king took offense. So it's an important lesson in Vidura's life that he didn't take offense either. Like King Chitraketu, he showed the mark of a truly exalted personality. Although offended, very nasty offense by Duryodhana, he didn't take offense at all. What he did was he took this as a great opportunity to get purification. "I'm going to go on pilgrimage to all the holy places. Bye-bye, royal palace. Hello, forest. Here I go. And I want purification." And as he traveled to get his purification, this event took place just before the Kurukshetra battle. Because shortly after Krishna's peace treaty was rejected, the battle took place. And then after the battle took place, Bhishma departed, and after Bhishma departed, the Rajasuya Yajna, and Maharaj Yudhisthira was enthroned as the king. Krishna returned back to Dwaraka, and he presided in Dwaraka for some time. And then Krishna left Dwaraka, and later on, so Vidura met Uddhava, who had seen Krishna in the forest after he left Dwaraka. So by calculation, something like 30 to 35 years had passed when Vidura was on pilgrimage. So some of us may go on pilgrimage sometimes we'll go visit Vrindavan, spend a few days, maybe a week, maybe a couple of weeks, then you have to come back and go to work and take care of your duties. Vidura didn't just stay for a week, 2 weeks, or 2 years, or 20 years, 30, 35 years he was on pilgrimage. He had completely renounced all comforts of life and was purifying his existence, visiting holy places. And after that, he came in contact with Uddhava. First he came in contact with Uddhava, and Uddhava was Krishna's chief minister in Dwarka. Uddhava was about the same age as Krishna. Uddhava was a Brahmin, if I can recall correctly, the son of Brihaspati, some high elevated birth. And Krishna, even Krishna took advice from Uddhava. And when it was time for Krishna's pastimes to be finished, he pulled Uddhava to the side. Uddhava, it's time, I have to go now. My pastimes on this earth are over. And when I leave, it's going to become very bad. Kali Yuga will begin, and I don't want you to have to experience Kali Yuga. So, my instruction for you is you go to Bhadrikashram, you go to where the Naranarayan Rishi and his devotees are residing, and you undergo austerities and you take good association there, because it's going to get really bad. Please go. So under Krishna's order, Uddhava left. And after Uddhava left, Krishna left. Krishna left Dwarka. But Uddhava couldn't bear Krishna's separation, because Krishna was everything for him. There was, without Krishna, there's no life. And so he disobeyed. He didn't go all the way to Bhadrikashram. He came back and started looking for Krishna. So that was his move, looking for Krishna. And where do you look for Krishna? Of course, Krishna's in the heart. Right? Krishna's in our heart. So he went everywhere, looking for Krishna, intensely looking for Krishna. And finally, one day, by the bank of the Jamuna River, very near to Vrindavan actually, he saw Krishna from a distance. Imagine seeing Krishna again. And this is described in a very wonderful passage. Krishna was resting with his back leaning against the banyan tree. You've seen a banyan tree before? Really big tree. Big, huge tree. And his very long limbs, which reached down to his knees. He was showing his forearm form, Vasudev Krishna, and yellow dhoti, and long hair, leaning against the banyan tree. And Vidura came running up to where Krishna was and offered his full dandavats before Krishna. His heart was pounding with joy to see his Lord Krishna. And the discussion that ensued between Vidura, between Uddhava and Krishna, is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's called Uddhava Gita. It's like Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is a discussion between Krishna and who? Arjuna. So just like Arjuna was putting questions and Krishna was giving answers, so in the Bhagavatam there's Uddhava presenting questions and Krishna giving his answers. It's very, very intimate, this discussion between Uddhava and Krishna. And there was one sage who was present, who just also by act of providence happened to be there. He came also through the forest and saw Uddhava sitting at the feet of Krishna asking Krishna questions. So he joined the class. Srimad Bhagavatam class. Given by Krishna himself. And that was Maitreya. Maitreya Muni. The Maitreya Muni is mentioned in this first verse. And Maitreya later on, so Uddhava was met by Vidura. Krishna instructed Uddhava and then said, now I've told you, I'm telling you for the second time. Go north. Go associate with the sages of Narayan Rishi, his devotees. Take shelter there. Go at once. Because the time I must depart. So as Uddhava was leaving Krishna's side, that's where Vidura met Uddhava. And as soon as Uddhava was met by Vidura, Vidura burst out with what, because he's been on pilgrimage for 35 years. He hasn't heard anything about anything. So he started asking about the welfare of the Pandus, the Pandavas, and the Kauravas, and the Yadavas, and everybody in Dwaraka, and how is Krishna, and please tell me, because you know Krishna so intimately, please describe everything about Krishna. And Uddhava couldn't speak. Because just hearing about, because he was feeling such separation from Krishna, just hearing topics about Krishna, he was choked up. Tears were streaming from his eyes. He couldn't speak. He was stunned in ecstasy, just in thought of Krishna. So needless to say, Vidura was overwhelmed just to see Uddhava like that. Finally, he gained his composure, and he began describing, and there's wonderful passages where he describes Krishna's pastimes in Dwaraka, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He's in ecstasy, just describing about Krishna in answer to Vidura's questions. But he has this instruction from his equilibrium is very disturbed because he has an instruction from Krishna to go. He has an opportunity to speak about Krishna. Krishna is going to depart. His emotions are just churning. So Vidura says, before you go, can I inquire about self-knowledge from you? And Uddhava says, actually, better that you go to Maitreya. Maitreya, he's just up north in Haridwar, because this was near Vrindavan. He's just north near Haridwar. Make a left and turn at the riverbank and you'll follow the signs and you'll get there. Gave a map how to find Maitreya. And this is another very important point of etiquette. Vidura questioned Uddhava, who was actually more advanced than Maitreya. Maitreya was elder, but Uddhava was more advanced. Why was it that Uddhava was more advanced? He had such deep feelings of attachment for Krishna. And Maitreya, he was a Muni. He was a great Rishi. He was very, 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 very learned in the scriptures, but he didn't have the same attachment for Krishna, deep attachment for Krishna, that Uddhava had. But out of respect for his elder, better you go pose questions to Maitreya. But he did that on the pretext that I've got to follow Krishna's instructions and head for Madhurikashram, so I'll see you later. Better you take shelter of Maitreya. And so he went to take shelter of Maitreya, and he found him, and he heard from him for a long time. And in fact, third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, leading into the sixth canto, it's all Vidura hearing from Maitreya. He heard at length, and a great array of subject matter. And so this is a very nice lesson of how Vidura became a sadhu. We'll just trace it out again. Fast forward this time. He took birth in a sudra family. Means he had no, by material consideration, no qualification. But he went to school with the royal family, And he was very, very wise. And in that wisdom, he was very detached. So when the opportunity came, he gave up his comfortable situation and wanted to further purify his existence by going on pilgrimage and going to the holy places and taking bath in the sacred rivers, just so that when he could meet a saintly person, a sadhu, Uddhava and then Maitreya, he could hear from them with perfect attention. And by hearing from them, posing all of his questions and hearing from them fully, he became a liberated soul. So the beginning of this chapter concludes with Vidura returning to the royal palace, not for comfortable life. He was finished with comfortable life years ago. But he came with compassion in his heart. And this is another sign of a great person. Their motivation is that of caring for the soul, the well-being and for the soul of others. He didn't care for the wealth. He didn't care for the fame. He didn't care for the opulence of royal family life. He cared about the soul of all living beings, and especially there was one that he could do great good for, and no one else could help at all. And that was his blind elder brother, Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra. So he returned to the palace. There was a grand reception, and it's described, I'll try to conclude this in 3 minutes, because natives are restless out there. He was received in a very, very wonderful way, and the Bhagavatam describes it was as if life had come back to a dead body. So imagine seeing a corpse suddenly come to life. That would be pretty miraculous, wouldn't it? So the idea is, in the poetry of the Bhagavatam, it's indicating that without the association of a sadhu, it's like death. And with the association of a sadhu, it's like, again, regaining life and regaining consciousness. The whole royal palace was so happy. Because imagine, he's been gone for years and years and years, and they thought he was gone. And he comes back. So they're so happy. So they have a grand reception and feed him very sumptuously and give him nice clothing, which he didn't accept. He accepted rather just his very simple attire, allowed him to rest, and then began presenting questions before Vidura. And that's where we're going to end. We'll begin this afternoon, this evening, where Yudhisthira presents questions before Vidura in a very, very respectful way. And it's very interesting because Yamaraj, who is actually Vidura, was the father of Yudhisthira. So it's like the son speaking to the father. Very interesting dynamic. So there's very, very nice lessons to be learned from this Srimad Bhagavatam, and hopefully by the course of discussing these topics, you'll all be, whoever attends, will be very encouraged to dive deeply into the subject matter and learn the important lessons of how to progress nicely on the path of spiritual life. How one can become, even an ordinary person by birth, can become a very exalted person by association and by mercy and by desiring that elevation. And the importance of receiving such a person when the opportunity arises by the grace of God. To receive that person in a fitting manner and to hear very carefully from them as the Pandavas are hearing from Vidura when he returns. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, I'm not going to go this long normally, but there's a lot of introduction to Vidura's life. It's very important to get a perspective on it. And very relishable also. So any comments or questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, I have a question.
Satyavati, when she desired that she, there should be heir to the throne,
yeah,
and she remembered Vyas, and Vyasji came, and he had two sons. How was Vyas associated with the maid servant of all this?
But what happened was, Ambika was requested by Satyavati, will you agree to conceive a second time? And Ambika didn't want to refuse her mother-in-law, but she didn't want to accept either. So what she did was, she gave her clothing and gave her ornaments and her royal attire to her maidservant. You wait, and when Vyas comes, maybe he won't know it's somebody else. But Vyas, being omniscient, he knew it was somebody else, but he was fulfilling the wish of his mother. That's how it happened. Ambika did a switcheroo.
Lights were out.
I'll repeat the question for those of you that can't hear the question.
Srila Prabhupada had talked so many writing about the Jurahana of this world, so many. But Vimura, when Jurahana was born, I mean, Vidura, because he was so stable, he did ask to get rid of this child, to annihilate this child.
I don't know about that.
From the early, as soon as Jurahana was born, Vidura had to get rid of the child, you know. And I did get rid of the child because
no, that was Kunti. Kunti and her first son, Karna.
No, not that bad. I know about that. But I mean, I think I don't like anyone but Jurahana. I mean, Vidura, when Jurahana, because he's the firstborn, I think.
Vidura wasn't the firstborn. Dhritarashtra was the firstborn.
No, I mean, Jurahana from the Dhritarashtra son, from the 100th son.
From the 100 sons.
Yeah, Duryodhana was the first part.
Duryodhana.
Duryodhana was when Gandhari pounded her body, a big lump came. It was 100 sons who had been in her womb for a long time. And so, by recommendation of a sage, the sons were separated and placed into a pot of ghee, each. And the first one with a cover. And the first cover to come off was Duryodhana.
But, yeah, I don't know, but I think that the minute he came out, something he had dead.
Yeah, they were very horrible omens.
Right.
At the time of...
Get rid of the child.
He was braying like an ass when they came out.
Yeah, he gave some indication like that. But it wasn't accepted. He was a non-compromising sadhu. Anything else? You have a very soft voice and it's a loud room. So you're going to have to speak up.
You're describing how the presence of the sadhu, the meaning of sadhu, it's like life is coming back.
Yeah. Well, in the case of, especially in the case of the Pandavas, we're going to hear about this upcoming, but the Pandavas were perfectly righteous and religious and virtuous. Because of that, their hearts were soft and clean in the quality of goodness. So, just like a mirror that's very, very well polished and clean, it can reflect the image. If the mirror is cloudy and dusty and not clean, it won't reflect the image very well. So it's, at least in the case of the Pandavas, because of their strong tendencies of dharma, a religiosity, a piety, when they had the, when had any auspicious opportunity, it resonated very strongly, moved their hearts very strongly. So in our case, we have our religious duties and religious practices. Both. So for conscientious, at least trying in those areas, trying to very attentively perform our sadhana practices and our daily duties in a proper manner, when there is the opportunity for a saintly person's association, our hearts are prepared. That's what happened when Vidura met Maitreya. His heart was prepared by long period of purification. Yeah. I'm sorry.
They want to chant Maharaj.
They're chanting.
Just one little consideration. In, it's not always we have that consciousness when a holy person comes. So in order to respond properly, the scriptures give you an option that it's natural to feel joy, and that's acceptable. But if you don't, in order to allow the proper etiquette to ensue, one should pay obeisances. Even if you don't feel that joy, if you pay obeisances, that's considered proper. So therefore there is no offense and there's no what we call transgression of etiquette, and that is considered to be proper. Because by paying obeisances, and then you're in the proper position to, we say, receive the Holy Ghost and like that. So scriptures give that option. And if you don't pay obeisances but you feel joy, that's just as good as paying obeisances. Because in your heart, you're already paying obeisances simply by that joy.
Nice point. Anything else? Okay. So, you have something?
So, Maharaj will be continuing saying katha today evening. All are requested to come to my house.
What time?
What time?
Six. What time will it start?
Six.
Say.
After leaving here, we can come.
Say what time?
Six.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, okay. If you need directions, Sridham is inviting everyone here, of course his home is a little smaller, but everyone here is invited to come to his home at 6 o'clock. So we're going to continue with this chapter. And so we're going to have aarti, and this, what we have to do is make a little aisle right here and very carefully carry the deities and then the table and place the table and then the deities over here. Right, Suresh? Okay. And we'll have aarti.
Huh?
Well, Sunila Madhava is recommending, do we want to consider leaving the deities right where they are?
Maybe we can do that.
Right where they are.
Right now.
No, Maharaj, not
well, no, after
the
aarti
is
finished.
After the aarti is finished.
After the aarti? Okay, that's fine.
It's already settled by everybody.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.